We are back on the Fan mid-morning show on a baby Friday. It's Justin Cuthbert and Haley Salvian, who's filling in again for Ailish Forfar, who I'm told celebrated the Sacramento Kings victory, thrilling victory over the Denver Nuggets, too hard last night. The good news is, though, Haley, we're back to beating up on lesser hockey nations at the World Junior Hockey Championship. It was not anything to be concerned about like it was in the loss against Czechia in the opener. Canada beats Germany 11-2. Double-digit fun, as you put it in the doc here. It was double-digit fun. And yeah, as much as it was about like getting back on track at the tournament, that night was all about Connor Bedard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looked so good. I mean, this is a special player that we're watching. We heard it a lot leading up to the tournament. This isn't the first time that we've seen him at this level either. But, yeah, he just put on a performance. He didn't disappoint. I feel like every time he stepped on the ice last night, he was making something happen. We saw that lethal shot in action a couple of times with the hat trick. He's got such a quick release, really accurate shot. He wasn't forcing it last night either, like we maybe saw against Czechia, as we discussed yesterday. Maybe Canada had some guys who were trying to, you know, do it themselves and take it upon themselves to be the guy to get them back in the game. He wasn't forcing it. He was making great passes. He was making plays. I mean, he's now at 12 goals and 21 points in 11 games at the World Juniors, and he's still only 17 years old. So, I mean, it's just a special player, and he was locked in last night.
Yeah, he's going to have a chance to, you know, author one of the greatest World Junior careers of all time for Canada at the end of this. He's going to have the benefit of having those extra games at the tournament that was canceled or at least postponed until the summer. But now this being his, I guess, third go-around, he's getting ample opportunity. And again, Canada plays Austria, rather, tonight. If it was Australia, maybe the record would be his in the first period.
Yeah.
But playing Austria tonight, he's going to have all the chance in the world to put up big numbers. And I guess thank God for him, because, I don't know, it's funny how we look at these two games differently, because there's no in-between. There's nothing like that's like comfortable if you're a Canadian hockey fan, because we're freaking out because they lose to Czechia. What's wrong with this team? What's wrong with our next crop of juniors? The hockey summit, all of this.
Yeah,
like
we're about to have a Canada hockey summit.
Yeah, you go so far in one direction. And then by the third period, after watching Connor Bedard do what he does, and it's like, yeah, it's really exciting in the moment. Third period starts and you're like, all right, don't put Connor Bedard out there anymore. Like, this is too much. I don't want to necessarily see, 15 goal scorers. We don't have to sing heave away for the 20th time against this German team, although that might again be the reality tonight against Austria. It just feels like there's no in between at the World Junior Hockey Championship, at least until like that semifinal or final. It's really difficult to like have measured takes after these games, at least in the preliminary round, because it's one way or the other with Canada at the World Juniors.
Oh, for sure. And I feel like if you factor in the other teams too, I mean, what was happening after the first day? People were looking at Canada losing and they were looking at the U.S. who won and being like, oh, hockey's your sport? No, like, we won our opener. You didn't. Like, oh, you bums. And then
thank God for the change, because we got Greg Wyshynski on later, and he would be puffing his chest out big time.
Oh, absolutely.
If it kept going the way it was going.
Well, and because the U.S. lose to Slovakia last night, and that was a pretty big shock, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
They win the goalie duel. They upset Team USA. I think the big storyline heading into the World Juniors was looking at a guy like Luke Hughes, and, you know, is he the best defender in this tournament right now? And Simon Nemec, who's another New Jersey prospect for Slovakia, got the best of him in this one. And so now we switch from like, oh, maybe the U.S. team isn't good and maybe Canada is the best. And you just flip-flop all the way until we see, you know, Sweden win the gold medal.
Reactionary
or whatever
takes.
Whatever it's going
to
be.
Reactionary takes until the dust settles. But until then, we just have to deal with the reactionary takes. And we will have more tomorrow after the game versus Austria. We'll break down Bedard a little bit more. But first, we're doing icebreakers this week because we're just meeting each other for the first time.
Yes.
And I want to know a little bit more. And we'll see where the conversation takes us after these icebreakers. And because I don't want to do them myself, but I want to make someone else do them. But this one's an easy one. Yesterday was about sports. Today, death row meal.
Oh,
what's your last meal?
That's not an easy one.
Why not? That's easy.
No.
But you can get a sense of someone based on the last meal, the death row meal. Not to make it like
morbid,
but...
Oh, my.
If you only had one more, what would it be?
Okay, so I am celiac.
Okay.
So I feel
like
if I'm
going to... You want to explain that a little further?
It's gluten intolerant. Okay. Yeah, so...
I put that on you. Do you want to explain that?
What do you mean? I can't eat gluten.
Okay. I mean, there are a lot of solutions there, as you well know.
Absolutely. But if I was going to die, I would just be like, give me the bread.
Would you?
Oh, yeah. What's the point in not? If I get an allergic reaction, my stomach hurts.
What if you get to digest the meal? What if they give you that grace where you get to digest the meal? Like, you don't want your final moments to be, like, really painful.
Oh, I mean, they're going
okay,
to be.
Okay, now we're getting morbid. Yeah, you can just go whatever direction you want in your last meal.
I think I would just hit the gluten hard. Mm. Just give me, you know, my mom make me something, you know. I don't even know. Pasta? Do I get, like, is it just an entree or do I get an appetizer?
You can go full, Italian feast if you really want to go
breakfast,
pizza, pasta.
Lunch, dinner?
That could be an issue, but I mean, I don't know if you're gonna be able to eat dinner if you go hard on the gluten for breakfast.
Yeah, I don't have like a set answer for this. I feel like I would just get like a bunch of, like, I would just have, you know, I'm Italian also. So you can imagine an Italian mm-hmm. who is gluten intolerant is
that must have been
was
controversial,
devastating.
No?
Oh, very controversial in my family. there were dinners mm-hmm. and meals with family members, them being like, you can just eat the pasta. Like, you don't need to lose the weight. Just eat the spaghetti. I was like, I can't.
It's not about weight.
this isn't a thing. Like, yeah. I cannot eat it. So I feel like I would just hit the Italian spread. Get me like a charcuterie board. Give me the bread. Give me the pasta. Some like a tiramisu at the end.
Okay.
That's not like a great answer.
No,
I feel like people would be like, give me some lobster. I would have some caviar. Like, no.
No,
me the bread.
No, I'd have the dirtiest pizza imaginable.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think, like, what's the best pizza? But that would just start, like, a debate in the text line. What's the best pizza in the city? I don't know.
What's, like, the highest gluten count pizza?
Yeah.
That's what you'd be
going for. A Detroit-style pizza?
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good one.
I think so.
In terms of the gluten count, or what
and just
go
being
for?
A good pizza.
I think it would be a good pizza, too. Okay, so there's the icebreaker. We know a little bit more. Maybe too much. Maybe
yeah.
maybe more than you actually
Thanks
wanted to reveal, but...
I shouldn't have said that.
You went there. It's okay. Solutions. It's an easier time to be gluten-free now than it was. Okay, back to Canada and Germany. Now, the story is Connor Bedard, right?
Nice little detour.
Nice little detour, yeah.
Back on track, yeah.
Connor Bedard is the story.
Yeah.
I'm like I'm confused a little bit okay. after that game. Because we understand, we're throwing around the word generational. We're throwing around the word like franchise superstar, surefire first overall. Clearly, there's a difference between him and Adam Fantilli. I know we're not supposed to have hot takes after
two games
at the World Junior Hockey Championship, but one skill set is shining a little bit brighter than the others.
Yeah.
However, I'm not sure what type of player this is going to be in the NHL. I am convinced that teams should be falling over backwards to try and be bad to put themselves in position to get the 18% chance at getting Connor Bedard. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely down for that. I think he's going to be a special NHL player. What exactly is he going to be? Like, what stands out about him? It's pretty obvious, right? That shot, offensive zone mastery, power play. I mean, he could be on all 32 power plays in the NHL, I think, right now. Like, who are the Leafs taking off their power play to get Connor Bedard in?
Okay, well,
I don't know if they'll find someone.
That's the one for me where I'm like, that's a little bit different because playing against the German PK is going to be a lot different than playing against,
that is a
like,
good point.
The St. Louis Blues penalty mm-hmm. kill. And, you know, you could pick one of the worst PKs in the league, and the guys are still bigger, faster, stronger. Goalies are harder to play against. So, like,
More organized.
Yeah, like, I can buy into how elite and how special Connor Bedard is, but sometimes I do feel like we need to pump the brakes on that stuff. I wouldn't be upset if I was wrong if you just dropped Connor Bedard in the Leafs power play against the Coyotes tonight and he scored mm-hmm. a goal. I'd be like, yeah, I'll eat that one. I don't care.
Yeah, okay.
But that's the one at this time of year I'm like, we need to calm down because we've been wrong about this stuff before mm-hmm. when we throw around the generational talent. And I think people throw that around sometimes, but I don't know like who the last legitimate generational talent was. Because like, weren't people saying that about Alexi Lafreniere?
Yes, that's a good point.
And he's on the fourth line with the New York Rangers right now.
However.
But he's not the same. Like, Lafreniere is not Bedard,
no.
right? But I think Bedard is the type of prospect who changes the trajectory of a franchise like if all goes right, right? Like the projections show that he's the kind of guy who's going to step into the NHL and change how things are doing. He's looked awesome to start the season. In the WHL, he looks great in the World Junior Championships. Like he's a game-breaking talent mm-hmm. at this level. Can that translate to the NHL? I mean, I don't think there's many people saying he won't. But how long is that going to take is the other side of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I don't buy into, like, drop him onto the power play and he's going to score immediately. But, I mean, he's got the shot.
Yep.
Like, that shooting ability is the one thing where I'm like, yeah, you know what? Maybe he can because he's got a wicked quick release. And the guys come at you fast mm-hmm. when they're trying to, you know, block a shot or they're trying to close the gap and get into the slot. I mean, he's got a wicked quick release and it's accurate. So I think, is his shot NHL ready? Like, probably.
Oh, yeah. Okay, how many people in the NHL have a better shot than Connor Bedard? It is. And maybe it's just how it looks coming off his
relatively,
stick. Relatively. Because like, he's not even that small. Against. He looks small, but he's not even that small. But just the way that it looks different. It looks completely different
yeah.
than what we see, I guess, in the proper context, which is a junior hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
However... And I was looking at his shooting percentage. He's at 15% shooting percentage in the WHL this year. Like, who's stopping his shot? Like, I don't understand how it's not higher. Anyway,
yeah.
to me, going
just
back
like
to your...
high volume. He's a high-volume shooter, I guess.
Yeah, but, like, when he had that breakaway last night, like, it's going in.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's not missing that chance.
The separation speed on that, too. Like, I know he already had the step. Like, mm-hmm. he had the gap, but no one was catching
that guy.
He's gone. It's toast. Yeah. I liked the way that he scored multiple ways last night, too. Like, mm-hmm. he got one of the dirty goals. He has the breakaway goal.
And the hat trick goal is ultra casual.
Oh, my God.
And I,
like the most casual, like top shelf, quick release.
But it was still like a high end shot without him even putting that effort in, which is kind of.
This is where we're like, is it because they were playing Germany or is it because Connor Bedard is ready to play in the NHL?
I think the average WHL team, how do they stand up against Germany? Do they beat Germany? I'm not really sure where all that lands.
Yeah.
However, going back to your point earlier with Alexi Lafreniere, to me, Shane Wright is Alexi Lafreniere. Like, if you put
That's
him out
point.
There, 82 games, 82 World Junior games, he's going to pile up the points. He's going to win a bunch of faceoffs. He's going to have a great goals for percentage. Like, all that stuff is going to look beautiful. It's going to look like he dominates every
yeah.
night.
Yeah, Matty Beniers is the one that's making an impact to the NHL level.
Matty Beniers and Alexi Lafreniere struggling. Like,
yeah.
Shane Wright's not automatic to dominate an NHL game because there is a leap here. However, that's because his skill set is more common.
Yeah, it's different.
It's I'm just a little bit better than everyone else at this level, and it's going to show over time. I'm not going to be able to score 7 points in a game because that's not me. That's Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
So... yeah, maybe he can't play on every power play right now. Maybe the shot looks a little bit more pedestrian and everything else looks a little bit more pedestrian as he goes up a level. Mm-hmm. But that looks undeniable over time.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be able to continue to improve these things and work on these things. It's more of a question around Lafreniere. It's more of a question around Shane Wright. With Connor Bedard, he has these unique skills in his toolbox already, which are for sure going to translate. But is he... Austin Matthews, where he can pair elite finishing ability with dominant two-way play mm-hmm. at the NHL level? Not really sure. Can he skate like Connor McDavid? No, not quite. To me, he looks like a mix of Artemi Panarin and Austin Matthews.
Okay.
And if you do have that, you're going to be really good at the NHL level. You're going to be very, very good at the NHL level. He's different in that his skill set shines.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and I expect it to shine at the next level. I don't know what's going to mean for the team that gets him because I don't think he's Connor McDavid. But I think he's worth being really, really bad. And I think it was a reminder to the Blackhawks, Ducks, Blue Jackets of the world that, hey, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow if we
absolutely.
Put ourselves in the best position.
How many teams woke up this morning and were like, yeah, we're done? Like team tank. Like how many teams are about to hit the tank job immediately?
Let's see some trades.
After watching Connor Bedard.
Let's get really reactionary
Patrick
and see some
Kane
trades here.
Patrick Kane gone. Jonathan Toews gone. Mm-hmm. Blackhawks are blowing it up even more. I think my favorite thing to do this time of year is like fire up Tankathon and do the lottery simulator.
Okay.
And
we
just see how devastating it is for the teams that actually should be getting the first overall pick. I ran this a couple days ago, and the very first time I did it, the Vancouver Canucks won the lottery, which is
they're going to be so smart that they're going to pull themselves out of the running.
Yeah, I know. Bo Horvat, and we're actually going to keep him and everyone else.
Well, we'll see about that.
We're just going to re-sign
everybody. The one bad decision they make. Many bad decisions.
I think with Bedard, the thing that I like about him is you see at the junior level, at least, he is very competitive. He forces turnovers. He has a smaller frame, but he's hard on pucks at that level. I think the question in his game is his size and his frame. Will that translate to him being an impact center? Mm-hmm. Or is he a guy who probably needs to kick out to the wing to adjust to the NHL size and speed before he moves up the middle? There aren't that many guys who can step into the NHL and play the center position, especially who are a smaller frame. We see that a lot. We saw it with, Elias Pettersson was playing on the wing for a bit. Tim Stützle in Ottawa kicked out to the wing before he moved up the middle, and he's technically a natural center. Matty Beniers is a guy that I look at. He's one of the few, rookies who have stepped into the NHL and just played center right away. And I think I look at Beniers as a really interesting example of what might help Bedard translate well, in the sense that, we're looking at that release again, right? And I recently did a feature about Matty Beniers, so this is why I keep talking about Matty Beniers when we're talking about Connor Bedard. But, I was talking to his coach at Michigan, and one of the things his coaches at Michigan said is, you can score, but, we need you to minimize the amount of stick handling before you get the shot off. You need to just catch and release. Get the shot off before the goalies can move post to post, because and before they can get set, I should say, because once you hit the NHL, Vasilevsky's already going to be there. Before you get the shot off, the goalie's set and you're not scoring that goal. So you need that quick, accurate release, because in the NHL, the goalies are just so good. You've got to get that shot off quickly. And so when I'm watching Connor Bedard yesterday, I'm thinking about how Matty Beniers adjusted to that. And I'm like, this kid doesn't need to make that adjustment. He's already got it, and he's 17 years old.
Yeah.
He gets that shot off quick and accurate. And that's the one thing where I look at Bedard and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
that shot will translate.
Exactly.
He's just got to get the space for himself in the slot, obviously. But that shot, it looks pretty good.
And he knows how to use the shot without actually taking the shot. I almost looked at him last night, this is a quarterback running a run pass option.
Yeah.
Where he's just showing that he's going to fire the puck and everyone else is frozen, and then he can just dish it beautifully, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And, with the sort of deft touch that you don't expect out of someone who's, hey, this is this dominant sniper. No, he can do it both ways. He can pass the puck as well, probably better than anyone else on the ice. And he can use his shot to actually create shots for others. So we're talking about skills translating. Oh, yeah, Dylan Guenther got a hat trick last night.
Yeah.
But he had three tap-ins because Connor Bedard got him the puck in an area where, you're few times a game, you're going to get one chance if you're a sniper on a power play with that sort of look per game, and credit to him for bearing those chances.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be the reality for him at the NHL level. But I think Connor Bedard can create his own reality, at least right now, and perhaps that's the future for him at the NHL level. A couple other things from this game. We talked about Adam Fantilli. We're going to give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll just push the Fantilli thing down. We're going to see more Fantilli, but for him to not really get involved now, two games in, an 11-2 victory, still on the outside looking in. He's still loading right now, it seems like. And it's just something to watch, but just further underscores how special Connor Bedard is. But Thomas Milic makes 14 saves, or at least deals with 14 shots. He's beaten twice in the game. The goal's not particularly great. It seems it's still a conversation. I don't think he necessarily cemented his place as Canada's starting goaltender. But for now, I think he gets at least one more crack at it based on how we've seen these goaltenders play so far, no?
Yeah, I think so. And I think we can talk to Sam Cosentino later in the show about who gets the start against Austria. Do they go with him on a back-to-back? Do you go back to Gaudreau, even though he had a difficult start? I'm not sure what Canada's plan is. It's 8 a.m. It's earlier in Halifax, so I doubt they've, had that conversation with
later
the media
in Halifax.
Yet.
Later.
Later in Halifax. Oh, God. Anyways, I don't know what the time zones are. So we'll see what happens with that. I just didn't look at that, and I know it's lame to keep going back to the same guy. I don't look at the two goals and say, like, that's the story of this game. I just feel like the story of last night was Connor Bedard had mm-hmm. the entire package on display. And it's hard to, like, zoom out and look at anything else. He was just so good. So we'll see. I don't know if, you know, we talked to Jason Buchla yesterday, and we asked, like, is goaltending going to be a problem? Do they have enough there to get through that? And he seemed pretty convinced that they would be okay with what they have in the crease. And they've done this before, right? There mm-hmm. was a couple years where Canada had, you know, the guy in the crease, you know, Devin Levi was great. You had a year of Carter Hart. But Canada's gone through multiple tournaments where goaltending wasn't exactly their strongest suit, and they've mm-hmm. come out and made it to the final or won or had a disappointing tournament. It's been a bit of a mixed bag with the goaltending and the results. So ultimately we're going to have to wait and see who grabs hold of the number one spot and how far this kind of goaltending picture in this forward group, when we're looking at all their first round picks and the talent, can take them.
Yeah, with Canada, it's never really about being dominant from start to finish. It's about coming through in a singular moment. And I mean, it's guesswork right now who's going to be more capable to come through in a singular moment. Maybe it's more important, like, who's not going to hurt you. I guess Thomas Milic hasn't hurt them yet. Can he come through in the big moment? I guess that remains to be seen. Connor Bedard at the World Juniors now, again, parts of three tournaments, because his stats still apply from last winter. 11 games played, 12 goals, 9 assists, 21 points in those 11 games. Pretty ridiculous stuff from Connor Bedard, and we'll see if that continues. Actually, spoiler, it will continue versus Austria later on tonight. Okay, Leafs news yesterday. People were up in arms. People were upset. People were not happy that the Maple Leafs were fined a total of $125,000 for two infractions.
Yeah.
I love how they're two separate releases.
The two
releases,
press releases coming like 10 minutes
back.
Apart. Yeah.
Why do 10 minutes? Like, I don't know.
It was funny.
I feel like it's for effect. Anyway, so the Leafs fined $100,000. I don't know if it's the first or second, but fined $100,000 for traveling, what, 100-plus minutes before they were allowed on Boxing Day. The NHL, NHLPA holiday pause is mandated. Teams need to be off for the full 3 days, which means they can't travel sometimes before the game to get to the various city that they need to go to. So the Maple Leafs trying to manipulate this thing. I don't know if they were trying to, you know, take off right at midnight. Anyway, they're gathering before midnight, which would go against the pause anyway.
So funny.
But it's semantics, it's loopholes, it's tattletaling. I don't know exactly how this went down, but the Maple Leafs jet lifted off the tarmac at Pearson a couple hours too early, if that, and they are fined $100,000 for their travels to St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, Sheldon Keefe fined, or the Maple Leafs fined on behalf of Sheldon Keefe, $25,000 for demeaning conduct directed at the officials in their win over St. Louis. It wasn't a very good, well-officiated game. Sheldon Keefe was very angry, and we saw that on the bench. This stuff doesn't bother me at all. Like, if the Leafs want to pay for a competitive advantage, $100,000 through fine, like, so be it.
Yeah.
It's probably more on the NHL for putting a team in a position where it has to travel the day of after a holiday break to play a game in a different time zone. I get it's not that far away, but it's still a different time zone.
And everyone
and
was
it is a unfair advantage for the home team that has to wait for a team to come, but
sure,
whatever, that's besides the point.
Yeah.
It's just that people are so, so mad about this. Like, the visceral response directed at, I guess, the NHL, or just to anyone who wants to see it on Twitter. Like, I just don't get it. It's a drop in the bucket for MLSE. Rich company has to pay minuscule fine is not something that gets me really up in arms, but it does for whatever reason. And I guess it's this, like, weird conspiracy thing that Daryl Sutter alluded to the opposite way, where the Leafs are treated differently because Leaf fans believe they're treated one way. The rest of the league feels like they're treated a different way.
Yeah.
And anyone, in the end, everyone's just yelling at the clouds because all this stuff doesn't really matter. MLSE will pay the fine gladly. Yeah. You'll pay the fine for 2 points, which they got in St. Louis. And I feel like we can just move forward here.
Yeah, I don't really know why Leafs fans would be mad about this, because the Leafs broke like a CBA mandate.
Clearly.
Right? Like not to be the person that's sitting on the radio and saying, hey, don't feel this way about something of the team you're a fan of. I don't mean to do that. But like, I think what I guess what would like get a response would be like, did the league just track the flight pattern or did somebody snitch?
Someone snitched.
So
someone
that's
definitely
where it's just like, oh, come on. Because it's the same thing as like, this happened a couple years ago. Remember when the Leafs got slapped on the wrist and said, no one's allowed to play or no one's allowed to train at your facilities in the summer anymore. Because other teams saw the competitive advantage that the Leafs were getting because they have good facilities that are open in the summer and their prospects and players were staying home and training in an NHL facility. And other teams were like, well, we don't have that open. You can't do that. Yeah. That's not fair.
We don't want to pay the hydro.
So lame.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things where I'm like, okay, that I would be really pissed off at because that's just teams complaining, going to Gary Bettman and being like, well, the Leafs have this open and that's not fair because they're getting better facilities. That shouldn't be something you complain to the commissioner about and like cause a big uproar over. That should maybe be an example of like, hey, well, maybe if we want to have that competitive advantage also,
we could turn the lights on.
Yeah, turn the lights on, let our guys come in, you know, have some good trainers. So the Leafs, you know, get slapped on the wrist for things like this. This isn't the first time. The latter example that I just brought up is something that is really annoying and quite frankly stupid. But this, I mean, they broke the the CBA mandate. You're not supposed to travel on the 24th, 25th, or 26th. And I think the funniest part is that they wanted to leave just after midnight. So it'd like technically be the 27th, but then they left at 10:30. Like, why?
Well, this feels like an air traffic control issue or something. you have to go now.
Like, oh, no.
And what are they, sitting on the plane for 40 minutes to try and save $100,000? Yeah. Like, that's not...
Yeah,
that's not the reality. I don't know.
This was from Elliot Friedman. Like the team argued that because St. Louis is a 90-minute to 2-hour flight away, it'd be better to go at night and get in when the players are accustomed to getting in before a game, rather than leave at 5 in the morning, fly for 2 hours, and then you know maybe have a morning skate, shake the legs out after 3 days off, and then play a hockey game.
God, imagine how bad the quality of that game would have been.
Oh, would have been terrible. And then. This was Elliot Friedman. He posted this on Twitter. I've asked a couple sources if players agreed to that plan, and the preliminary replies are yes. So it looks like the players were like, yeah, no, like,
let's. Yeah,
and
let's
we
definitely
know that
go
these guys are like very, you know, they have their rituals and they kind of crave that. And so
they're used to flying at that time.
Yeah. So it's like,
after
whatever,
game,
let's
whatever.
Do it. And I just think in a cap world, I mean, this is how you flex your budget, I guess, right? Like, you're not going to spend more on players, technically.
You
so
take the fines.
100K for arrested players, who cares? We were talking about this off air. I was trying to think, like, what's the average price for Leafs tickets? Like, how quickly do they make that 100K back? Mm-hmm. 500 tickets? A box? Like, it's so expensive to go to game. If a ticket is $200, sell 500 for...
No.
For an upcoming game and you're fine. The Leafs are fine. It's just, I don't know.
It's absolutely a drop in the bucket. It doesn't matter.
It's just very funny.
It doesn't matter at all. And yet it seems to matter more than anything else
on
Twitter, at least my timeline. Yeah, who's tattling?
That's what I care about.
I want to know, but yeah, who tattled on the facility? Who tattled on this? What exactly happened?
I think fans were probably more mad about Sheldon Keefe getting fined $25K for, quote, demeaning conduct directed at the officials.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
And I can imagine, I would love to, like, be a fly on the wall on the conversation that happens when they're about to hand that fine down. And I get it. You know, guys, Rod Brind'Amour has been fined for this before. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the examples where you see Rod Brind'Amour screaming at the ref, he gets fined. You see Sheldon Keefe screaming at the ref with the same passion and intensity. Mm-hmm. And that would be one of those situations where if he doesn't get fined, then we're like, well, why do the Leafs get treated differently? Like, why is Sheldon Keefe not getting fined? Because Rod Brind'Amour gets fined for this a lot. Mm-hmm. Other coaches get fined for this a lot. But...
like, what's the word? What's the word that gets them fined?
But, like, where was the other part of the... I mean, it was probably just the way he was screaming.
Yeah, maybe.
It's probably a couple
demeaning,
bad,
though?
A couple of bad words.
I think he mixed in a couple bad words there.
Yeah, calling somebody dumb.
Can I say that, though?
On the radio? I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think, like, in that conversation, and this is why I want to be a fly on the wall, did anyone raise their hand and be like, hey, should we talk about the blown call that Sheldon was screaming at, because Zach Aston-Reese was bleeding after a high stick in the face.
But the,
was it just like, just find Sheldon Cave, it's fine.
But the funny thing to me, the ironic thing to me is that Sheldon goes off after watching a replay, and the officials, I'm not defending the officials, but they don't have the benefit of replay. Like, if you got really mad right away, but I guess like the video shows Sheldon getting really mad after having to see it for a second time, which of course officials don't get the benefit of doing that. It was a very poorly officiated game at moments though.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes McCauley was in charge, and guess what? He's the guy that the NHL loves so much and loves throwing out there in big spots. So it's not perfect by any means. If there's a blow up, 25,000, whatever, doesn't matter. But there should be some sort of internal accountability in addition to.
Yeah, you miss a call.
But we're going to be screaming about this forever with the NHL, and they're just never going to do it because they're going to do everything that they can to protect their guys and, I guess, levy lame fines against coaches who speak out or at least blow gaskets in the moment. The big news from the Leafs yesterday, or the bigger news, at least in my opinion, was Morgan Rielly. Expected to return in front of the 5K fans that may or may not be there at Mullet Arena.
I want to go Coyotes. To a game at Mullet Arena.
I really
sorry.
Do, too.
I know it's lame to say 5K, but looks fun.
Oh, if you had a big game there, it would be amazing to be a part of that 5K. Unfortunately, they're not going to have many big games there until they move into, well, even if that, a new arena. He's expected to be paired with Timothy Liljegren. Leafs go 12-2-1 in his absence. A lot of important progress, I think, made in his absence. In fact, I think this injury kind of helped change the way they played, mm-hmm. helped establish their current identity. Because I remember the start of the season, Morgan Rielly was just completely let loose. Like, you'd go and do whatever you want. You are officially a rover. You do your thing. You look at the Leafs now, they're not doing that sort of thing. They are maybe the most defensively responsible team in the entire NHL at this moment. And they look like a completely different team compared to how they began this season. It feels like, to me, to the Leafs are like, they have all these ideas in the offseason. They come back and like, let's try all these things. And none of the things work. And then Sheldon Keefe's just like, hey, we got to, you know, do what we are supposed to do. And we're going to start doing that after about a month. And we're going to settle things down. And Morgan Rielly, I guess, maybe coincidentally, has not been a part of a lot of the good that's happened over the last month because he's been out with injury. So he's going to have to fit in to a system that has refined itself in his absence. And I think that's a really important thing. And we got Morgan Rielly talking about his return. Let's hear him now.
Oh, really good. It's been a long process, it feels like, but the last few weeks, there's been lots of progress, so it's been good. I've been playing outstanding, and it's been a pleasure to watch. There's been guys that have accepted more responsibility within their roles and have played extremely well. So that's obviously, as a teammate of theirs, you're proud of it, and it's very encouraging moving forward.
So Rielly returns to a more organized environment, something that's working better than it was when he left it. However, he's still very important. And we've seen a little bit of cracks in the defensive structure and the goaltending of late here. Very important to get him back. However, in your opinion, how does he fit in? Like, who does he play with? And how do the Leafs kind of settle themselves now that they get their number one defenseman back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting conversation because maybe where he fits in right now versus when Rasmus Sandin comes back, that's probably a big thing, too. Do you just reunite Sandin and Timothy Liljegren on that third pair? Do they keep Gio and Justin Hall together? Because they've looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's been a pair that Sheldon Keefe can put in kind of wherever. Maybe they go back to TJ Brody-Morgan Rielly pairing. Obviously, we know that Sandin is still out, so he's going to be with Liljegren. I think I go with the pairs that I just named out once they're back to full strength. I feel like maybe early on they keep Rielly on that third pair, maybe keep, I guess the other question, and I think we just got this note in here, was that's our producer Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Do they stay with five forwards on the power play when
Rielly
comes
back? Apparently
that
is the plan.
Which is very fun.
Insulting to Morgan Rielly.
No, I mean, because you don't want to throw him back in. He hasn't played since November 21st. The team is 12-2-1 in his absence. Obviously, he's very important to what they do, but you don't want to completely change what has got you to that record, right? And their power play, was pretty stale when he was quarterbacking it. I mean, I think there was people who thought Rasmus Sandin should keep that number one QB spot even when Morgan Rielly came back before they moved to the five forwards. So we'll see what happens with the special teams. I think you just put him in and you ease him in. You know, you don't want Morgan Riley coming in and playing 25 minutes in all situations, mm-hmm. especially not against the Arizona Coyotes. So I think you're going to see him get eased in. The other question that I guess I have, who becomes your seventh defenseman? Is it Connor Timmins? Is it Jamie Benn? Can the Leafs afford? Do they have the cap space to keep both of them on the roster? Like, who gets waived and put with the Marlies?
I think as long as Jake Muzzin is out, you could probably carry those two.
But don't you want to accrue some more cap space for the deadline?
Mm-hmm. So eventually you're going to have to make that decision.
I'm pulling out my little calculator.
Yeah, it's too much to do that math on the air
right
now.
Too much math to do that live. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's all good. People who've listened to the show know that I'm all for the 11-7. I would like to see the Maple Leafs embrace 11-7 because I feel like they could sort of figure out the way to best deploy defensemen who are capable but not exactly a collection of the most well-rounded defensemen. Mm-hmm. In the world.
Sure.
Like, it's certainly people or defensemen with skill sets, but maybe don't have everything, and you have to sort of piece it together a little bit. And you get a guy like Connor Timmins can soak up second power play minutes, and you can shelter him at even strength. And a guy like Gio, you could play less and prepare him for the playoffs. I just feel like there's a lot of benefits to that. In addition to, hey, if you take Joey Anderson out of the lineup and get a little bit more of Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and John Tavares, that's not necessarily a bad thing either. So I don't expect him to do that. I guess it would be unconventional, but I guess five forwards on a power play is unconventional. So maybe they go that route, but it seems like Sheldon Keefe's always been sort of reluctant to go that way. Mm-hmm. It just feels like they have what you need, which is capable defensemen who are not going to play on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay Lightning usually use about 9 defensemen on their way to Stanley Cups, or at least did over the last 2 or 3 seasons. So it's important to have that depth, and that mm-hmm. depth has been one of the reasons why they have such a good record at this point in the season.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to be back on the top pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's going to be their most. He's going to be their most important
Morgan
defenseman.
Morgan Riley to stay on the third pair
exactly.
forever.
Yeah. You don't have to throw him in right away, but you said 25 minutes. He'll have to get to 25 minutes sooner than later. Last note before we break: a report out of Korea yesterday. Hyunjin Ryu timeline for return remains fixed. He's targeting a July return to the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, on previous shows, we made the mistake of like just counting him out. I still believe it's a little far fetched to believe that he's going to have a massive impact on the Toronto Blue Jays this summer. However, if he's targeting a return in July and gets to that point, well, that kind of sets you up pretty nicely to make at least some decisions on your fifth starter in the moment. So if he's able to come back, hey, then you have your fifth starter. Blue Jays rotation set. You don't need Mitch White or Yusei Kikuchi to be getting the ball every fifth day. But if you don't have that luxury of Ryu returning to the rotation and Mitch White and Kikuchi aren't working out like we maybe expect, well, the trade deadline's right there and you can make your decision then. So we've been talking about, hey, are they going to add another starting pitcher? Well, with the Ryu thing and the depth that's already in place and the possibility to add and maybe know a little bit more about your team in July, it just makes sense that they would at least be patient with the approach on Ryu. Of course, he underwent Tommy John surgery last June. Leaving the door open makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially we had the pretty good conversation about it with Caitlin McGrath from The Athletic yesterday. She covers the Blue Jays. And we had the conversation of, like, what's the, you know, how do we feel about the state of the starting five? Like, the rotation. I think their top four is set. I think they look good in terms of your top four starters. And then, yeah, the fifth starter is that big question mark. And we didn't have the conversation about Ryu with her yesterday. I think this was probably a pleasant surprise for a lot of people that he's, you know, ahead of schedule. Because what Tommy John surgery is a 12 to 18 month recovery time, and him being expected to come back in July is on pace to be mm-hmm. on the shorter end of that. So that's probably,
especially for someone his age.
Yeah, absolutely. He's what, 35 years old. So I think the question is, what does he look like after second Tommy John surgery at 35 years old? But if you can have the internal competition for that fifth starter spot between Ryu, Yusei Kikuchi, and Mitch White,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to hope that at least one of those guys can grab hold of that spot and provide you, you know, stable and reliable pitching,
mm-hmm.
right? They're not going to miss on all three.
They could. They could definitely miss
right?
on all three. Ryu could be a complete non-factor. The other two could repeat their performance from last year. But the good news is, hey, they still have four other guys who you should feel really, really good about. Despite the unknowns at the fifth starter position, the Blue Jays still have one of the best rotations, at least on paper, in the division and in the American League. After the break, we'll ask Haley to repurpose some content. Season predictions 3.0 at The Athletic went up earlier this week. The hockey panel discusses, you know, what they were right about, what they were wrong about, things of that nature. We'll ask Haley to go over her biggest findings from that process. That after the break, The Fan mid-morning show, Justin Cuthbert and Haley Salvian. Now, Haley may just be humble, but I mentioned to her yesterday that the power that the Athletic writers possess is truly unmatched. You guys come on and collaborate on a season predictions post, and betting lines are moving, opinions are forming. It's very powerful stuff. And that's why I want to talk about the season predictions 3.0. The Athletic went up earlier this week. You guys discussed what you were, you know, what you expect from the rest of the season, picks for MVP, so on and so forth. And we don't want to go over all of it. Rather, I just want to know kind of where you stood out among the collection of writers that were offering opinions on this collaborative effort. So I'll give you a chance to just talk about you a little bit more, Haley.
Oh, God.
What were you most right about from the first couple months of the season?
Okay. Well, I hate talking about myself. And however, I will talk about when I am right, because I think enough people tell me I'm stupid online.
Okay.
That I can, that I will cherish
so
the moments.
Dunk on them, Haley.
Where
dunk on
I am, in fact, correct. I have been a very proud member of the preseason prediction, or the preseason pick of Jim Montgomery for the Jack Adams.
Okay. So steadfast all the way through. You
absolutely
had him preseason?
Yes. So the way we do this on The Athletic, we slot in, like, we keep track. Here's how much this person had preseason, mm-hmm, November. Now we'll keep doing it every month or every couple months, and we'll keep showing the way that it tracks. So in the preseason, 7.7% of the staff that voted on this picked Jim Montgomery to win the Jack Adams.
Two or three?
Yeah.
Of you?
Yeah, like just a little handful. And now he's at 45.9% to win the Jack Adams as per this vote. So everyone's jumping on board. For me, I looked at Jim Montgomery and thought, like, we know that he's a good coach. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we also know that there was some, you know, personal things that happened in Dallas that made him leave that team. But he's a good coach, and he's a good systems coach. We know that things didn't work out in Boston with Bruce Cassidy, and they come in with a fresh voice behind the bench. And my thought process was, if they can, and this is the thing, like, the way I picked this wasn't even correct. I was like, if they can tread water long enough before, you know, Marchand and McAvoy come back,
right,
and they can be competitive, then I think Jim Montgomery is going to win it. I didn't think that they were going to be, like, as good as they were, and then the guys were going to come back this early, and then they were going to, you know, be the number one team in the league by most power rankings and by the NHL standings. So that's one that I'm very proud of.
It is really
the Jack Adams.
It is really the perfect Jack Adams story. The problem is there are a couple good Jack Adams stories. I mean, the story that Rick Bowness is writing, coming in, stripping Blake Wheeler of the captaincy, turning that franchise around. You can write a Jack Adams story about that. You can write a Jack Adams story about Bruce Cassidy, Pete DeBoer, Lindy Ruff, although that one's fading a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I think you're right. I think the leading candidate, and I think the betting line does show this, should be Jim Montgomery, mm-hmm, for stepping into, let's be honest, it's a pretty favorable situation.
Yes.
But getting them through the absences, as you mentioned, of Brad Marchand and Charlie McAvoy without really any issue, and taking a team that, in a situation that got really stale, and making it a juggernaut. The Boston Bruins are the best team in the NHL.
They're dominant
clearly
right now.
And a lot of that has to do with what they put in place, but a lot of it also has to do with Jim Montgomery coming in and making sure to make best use of that great situation.
Yeah. I'm surprised that Pete DeBoer had 0% of the vote. He went from 5% in the preseason to 0 the last time we did this, which was this week. And I find that very shocking, because what we know about Pete DeBoer when he steps into, mm-hmm, a new team is that he kind of has that, like, strikes lightning in a bottle, whatever you want to call it. Like, he gets results very quickly. Like his first year with the New Jersey Devils, he goes the finals, lose in the finals. His first year with the San Jose Sharks, goes the finals, loses in the finals. And then with the Vegas Golden Knights, they go to the third round back-to-back, and then they miss the playoffs. But he's a guy who can, like, get results right away, and we're seeing that with the Dallas Stars right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the track record that he has when he first starts behind the bench with the team. But, yeah, 0% of the vote, which is a little shocking. I would say that he probably has more of a case for this than some of the guys who are up higher on here.
I agree.
I think Barry Trotz got 5. That's very funny looking at this. Barry Trotz got 5% of the vote in the preseason because people just assumed that he was going to get hired to coach, Canucks or whatever,
and
then just take
assumption.
Them to the promised land.
Yeah.
And that's now at 0%.
If I had to do this exercise, I think I would have been preseason. I would have been Don Granato. I thought Buffalo was going to take a step if they made the playoffs. People love Don Granato.
I'm a big Donnie Meatballs person.
Everyone loves him. He doesn't have to endear himself to anyone because he's already charmed everyone. So I thought there's a chance that he would be in the sort of the pole position there. Then I would have went to DeBoer. Now I'm with you. I think Jim Montgomery should be the favorite at this point of the season. Not to rile up the haters or get the pitchforks and torches out against you, but what are you most wrong about if you reflect on this process?
Most wrong about would I don't know. This is a tough one because...
Nothing?
I'm trying to think back because I do think the teams that I kind of picked to, you know, win the Stanley Cup or be the runners-up teams to make the playoffs are all kind of tracking. My original Stanley Cup champion pick was the Carolina Hurricanes, and I think I had the Avalanche as the runners-up, and that's still tracking. I think now most people are going with the Boston Bruins to win the Stanley Cup, and I think that's fine. I haven't seen anything from the Bruins yet that would suggest mm-hmm. that they're not going to be a tough team to beat, honestly, and this is a complete sidetrack on my part. I am so excited to see the absolute dogfight that is going to happen for these teams to try to come out of the East in the playoffs. Because you've got the Bruins, Leafs, Hurricanes, and the Tampa Bay Lightning mm-hmm. all clicking along. And it's right now. The season's very long. Like, it's only December, so we'll see how these teams are looking months down the road. But those teams are among the top 10 in the league right now.
Yep.
And they're all going to be scratching and clawing with each other to try to get, you know, all the way. I don't know what I was wrong about.
It's acceptable to say nothing.
I feel like I typically fly by the seat of my pants when I'm doing predictions, and this is the one year where it may have worked for me.
You know what?
I was probably wrong about.
You might be a little bit wrong about Colorado, fourth in the Central Division at this point.
I'm not worried about the
You're
Avalanche.
Comfortable with them? Valerie Nichushkin also hurt now. Like, they're dealing with some stuff this year.
But these guys are going to come back.
Mm-hmm. And Nathan McKinnon's on the way back.
We saw how dominant they were when they were at full health in the playoffs last season, and nobody was stopping them. And I think they have earned the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely subjective. I mean, there's teams that have been playing better than the Avalanche right now that I'm like, eh.
So you laid out four teams in the East there, three of which have to go through each other in Boston, Tampa, and Toronto. So that gives Carolina an advantage here.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of the advantages, or I guess one of the byproducts of having some injuries, is that they've had to turn to Pyotr Kochetkov.
Mm-hmm.
Not good at saying that name, but I think I actually got it there.
Yeah.
He is risen up the Calder Trophy odds boards. He has become an essential part of the Carolina Hurricanes and their rise and them overtaking the New Jersey Devils for the top spot in the Metro. But you have a note in there that we should be a little bit careful to anoint him or to run and bet him for the Calder Trophy because he might not necessarily be around this entire season.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to be around. And I also think that that is diminishing what Logan Thompson has done from the start of the season on. I think Logan Thompson has a bigger sample size as like the number one goalie in terms of rookies. So I think going with Kochetkov is kind of just like almost not galaxy braining it because he's been very, very good, but Logan Thompson has been too, and he's been there all season.
And going to be there all season.
Exactly. Like, there is no question. And mm-hmm. like, barring something unforeseen or some kind of injury, Logan Thompson is going to continue to be not just like the rookie guy for the Vegas Golden Knights, but their number one goaltender.
Right.
The Golden Knights will go as far as he can take them, as well as their injuries. And they've got a great forward group, et cetera. But he's made their goalie picture look a lot better than most people maybe would have thought heading into the season. In Carolina, he's 10-1-4 with a .924 save percentage. But I think the big question is, Anderson's been back on the ice. Antti Raanta is still healthy. That duo won the Jennings Trophy, which is awarded to the goalie tandem or the team that has the lowest goals against in a season. They won that last year. So when Freddie Anderson comes back, like, then now you've got the question mark. Do you just not play your number one goalie? Do you not play Antti Raanta? Do you just keep riding the hot hand, which is this young rookie goalie in Pyotr? I can't pronounce it either. Kochetkov, I do apologize. Or is he going to keep rising in that Calder race? I think that's the question that you have to ask yourself before you start laying money down on the Carolina Hurricanes rookie goalie winning the Calder. Because at the end of the day, I think Matty Beniers is just going to win as I bring it all back to Matty Beniers.
Right.
The thing I was wrong about, I will say, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I think I was wrong because I was just like so confident that Patrick Kane wasn't going anywhere.
Really?
Like, every time we've done this, I've just been like, Patrick Kane's staying in Chicago. He's not going anywhere.
And now you're convinced otherwise?
I'm not convinced yet, but now I'm like, ooh. Because the more the rebuild starts to be real in Chicago this season, the more they start to lose and continue to lose. Yeah, and he is still an elite player in this league. He's struggling this season, but like Patrick Kane is probably the best guy who could be available at the deadline. Right? Yeah. The most skilled player, the one with the most pedigree.
Biggest name.
Biggest name on the deadline. He has a ton of control over his situation. So for a while, I was just like, he's just going to stay in Chicago. He likes the city. He's got his family there. He's going to cash the checks.
Doesn't want to move twice.
Exactly. Like, and if the only teams that can afford him are rebuilders, why would he not just stay in a rebuilding team in Chicago? But the more you look at it now and the trade that the New York Rangers made, to dump the cap space of Ryan Reeves. They're accruing some cap space. If Chicago, you know, retains half that salary, the math could check out with a team like the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're a team that could win the Stanley Cup this year, but I start to look at that and some how the numbers are shaking out and just how bad it's getting in Chicago. Now I'm like, maybe he will go. Maybe he's going to move on to the team of his choosing, have another kick at the can, try to win another Stanley Cup, at least be on a competitive team. And I think the Rangers are interesting because he could be reunited with Artemi Panarin, who they played.
Who wouldn't want to see that?
Very well together when Panarin was in Chicago for a short stint. So, yeah, that was probably what I was wrong about, was just like how confident I was. Like, I was talking on podcasts and stuff like, he's not going anywhere. Why would you leave Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got
that
there.
Looks a little
we got
bad,
there.
Yeah. I'm not that vain. I was randomly very good at my preseason predictions this year.
I am all for Patrick Kane. I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong because I want him to. I think that's the story of the in-season trade market. If Patrick Kane moves on, it's a good thing for the NHL because it'll make things a lot more exciting. And just to go back to Carolina for a second, the one thing about them is that they have the flexibility to make the right move from themselves. I'm not saying they're getting Patrick Kane, but they could add. And I'm not saying they're going to deal Raanta or Anderson, but if they want to go to Kochetkov, they can do just that. We'll talk about that and more with Greg Wyshynski after the break. We also have S. Barahini, Sam Cosentino, and Mike Pritchard on later in a busy fan mid-morning show. Wish after the break.